Hello, my name's Dan Kalinski. I'm a QC at Landmark Chambers. One of my areas of practice is non-domestic rates. In today's podcast, I'm going to offer a few reflections on the preparation of expert evidence in rating cases. Now, these reflections are primarily aimed at the position where a surveyor valuation expert gives evidence in the upper tribunal lands chamber. However, I hope they may be of interest to those considering giving evidence in the valuation tribunal and also to all professionals who are involved in rating cases where this perspective may be of some assistance to them. Now, the first thing I'd like to emphasise is the purpose of being an expert in a tribunal. And the duty is obviously to the tribunal itself. And the essence of the role is to provide the tribunal with a reasoned expert opinion, which will assist them to decide one or more of the issues in the case. And if I could just unpack that, the first element of that is critical. It's assisting the tribunal. The second element of that is that it's necessary to understand what the issues are in the case and to address them, and to address them by showing what your reasoned opinion is. So not simply what your opinion is, but what the basis of that opinion is, how you formed that opinion, what facts you have relied upon or established or assumed in giving that opinion, how you have weighed aspects of the evidence in forming that opinion, what, if any, assumptions you have made and why you have made them, what matters you say are of particular assistance and what matters you have placed limited weight on and why in forming that opinion. So it's that essence of the reasoning which will be critical in allowing the tribunal to perform their role of determining, in the light of all of the evidence they hear, how they want to decide the matters in the case. Next, I just want to think about what it is that actually helps the tribunal. And I'm very much of the view that the absolute critical thing is to be a credible witness. Credibility is the most important thing. Now, you establish credibility in part through demonstrating your expertise and your experience and skills to assist the tribunal. But more than that, you establish credibility by enabling them to trust that you are reliable, that you have undertaken a robust assessment of the evidence in the case, that you have approached matters and continue to approach matters with an open mind, how you respond to the contrary views, either as expressed by other people in the case or at the hearing in questioning of you by legal representatives or the tribunal itself, are critical to the manner in which you established your credibility. The tone in which you give your written evidence and, of course, in due course, any oral evidence that you give are also essential. So do not exaggerate, do not overstate your opinion, and be candid in identifying what limits there are in what opinions you can express, or, as I've indicated, what assumptions you've made, so that you're not creating a hostage to fortune which might damage not only your case, but most critically, the credibility of your overall evidence. The next topic, just to flag very briefly, is presentation. And presentation has to be approached with that purpose of assisting the tribunal at the forefront. So what are the issues that are going to be addressed? What are the instructions that you have given? What are the facts that you have relied upon? And in identifying and addressing those issues, one is looking for a well-structured and focused analysis, which is as succinct as possible and as direct in terms of allowing the tribunal to understand the conclusions you've reached, the basis of that and how you have weighed all of the evidence. Now, allied to that, however, is the need to show you're working. And it may well be that those two aspects, in other words, succinctness and good presentation and showing your workmanship, are to some degree in tension. And I have found that it is very useful to use appendices so that you are not distracting from the focus of your analysis with unnecessary detail, but you have available to the tribunal the workings that have informed the conclusions that you are expressing, perhaps set out in appendices, which can be examined to the extent necessary, but will also show how you have drawn upon the material in order to reach the conclusions that you have done. Because you may have filtered out certain bits of evidence and decided that they are not particularly material to assisting you in reaching your conclusion, but the tribunal will have to grapple with the available evidence, and it may well be that a piece of evidence that you have set to one side at a relatively early stage of your analysis is something that the tribunal needs to examine for itself to reach its own conclusion. And if your report is entirely silent on that evidence, that may look like a defect in your analysis. Whereas if, for example, in an appendix, you have shown how you have thought about it and why you are placing less weight on that evidence in the overall conclusion, then that will show the tribunal that you've grappled with it, and it will also alert the tribunal to that evidence, and that will give it confidence. And it may take a different view, but it will at least know how and why you have thought about that evidence in the way that you have on the face of your report read together with its appendices. Next, I want to say something briefly about supplementary reports. Now, in old-fashioned language, these are called rebuttals. But the Upper Tribunal doesn't like the term rebuttal because it sort of assumes, if you like, a confrontation of analysis and an adversarial approach. And that is out of tune with what the tribunal expects from its experts. It expects its experts to work together to narrow issues and to assist the tribunal. And it is best if the rebuttal, as it was previously called, is not approached in a way that is trying to knock down the other side's evidence as its primary goal, but rather to assist the tribunal in narrowing matters that are in dispute, explaining what the key differences are, in a way that is focused on both the issues in the case and the efficient determination of those issues. So it is important that supplementary reports are reflective, that they identify what the issues are, they identify the extent of the common ground that exists, they narrow the issues to the extent that it is possible, and then they succinctly identify what the key differences remain and any necessary evidence that is reflecting upon the perspective that has been put by the other side in its reports without repeating the content of the main report. So it is critical to think, how is this further evidence assisting the tribunal to narrow or resolve issues in the case? That is the essence of the supplementary report, and it is best to lose the mindset that this is a rebuttal of the other side's case. Now, the duty as an expert is an ongoing duty, and so therefore it is an inevitable part of the function of an expert that you are continually reflecting upon whether your opinion remains as it has been expressed in writing or whether there are material factors which change this. And a recent case of the Upper Tribunal, Go Outdoors and Lacey from 2019, highlights this, because in that case, the surveyor changed his opinion in his evidence in chief. And it's important to identify how the tribunal dealt with that, because the tribunal were not critical of the fact that the expert had changed his opinion, because that was a necessary part of the ongoing duty to reflect. But what it did indicate was that in the interests of efficiency and fairness, if an expert is likely to change their opinion in their evidence in chief, then they ought to prepare a further document made available as far in advance as possible of the hearing, which alerts parties to that intention. So the key message is ongoing reflection and is a critical part of the role. If that involves changing an opinion, that is not in itself a bad thing, but one has to give early notice of that change in order to be fair and in order to assist with the efficient determination of the proceedings. Next, I just want to say a word about the relative roles of an expert surveyor and a legal team in the preparation of the case. And the short answer to this is that everybody needs to keep in mind what their role is. So the expert's role is to give an opinion on a matter in the case consistent with their ongoing duty to the tribunal. Now, the legal team's role is to assist in structuring the presentation of the case as a whole. So it's important to appreciate that it is absolutely no part of the legal team's role to form a substantive opinion on the questions of within the expert's expertise, or to require or even pressurise the expert to form a different opinion. It might be appropriate for the legal team to test the extent to which the opinion has taken account of evidence, to make constructive suggestions for the manner in which the expression of the opinion has been structured, perhaps to identify where there might be potential overstatements, and to test whether the way that the evidence is presented in a draft report is the best that it can be in order to assist the tribunal. But those are suggestions, and the content and substance of the report is the responsibility of the expert, because it is the expert who will be examined upon it, and it is to be a complete and accurate expression of the expert's opinion. So there can be advice from the legal team, but the decision as to the substance of the report has to be the responsibility of the expert in the final analysis. That leads me on to my penultimate point, which is delegation. Now, delegation in the preparation of an expert report is extraordinarily dangerous and is not recommended at all. As I've indicated, the responsibility for the report is the expert's, and the person who will have to answer to that report will be the expert in to the tribunal and to questioning from the other parties in the case. It is almost always a false economy and potentially a real hostage to fortune to seek to delegate the preparation of any part of a report to somebody within your team, because ultimately you as the expert will be responsible for the overall opinion and need to be up to speed and able to explain the reasoning. So if you can't explain a paragraph in your report, then that will fatally damage your credibility. So too, if you can't explain the process of analysis that might be there recorded on the face of your report in, let's say, Appendix 15 on a point of detail, then that might seriously diminish the trust that the tribunal has in your opinion. And as I've emphasised, credibility is absolutely critical. And there is a real danger, in my experience, that delegation may lead to a less well-prepared report and may therefore run the risk of fundamentally damaging the most important thing, which is the credibility of the expert in the eyes of the tribunal. Now, finally, I should just mention that what I've endeavoured to do is to give a concise overview of some of the points relevant to the preparation of expert evidence based on my experience in this area. What I've not done is I've not attempted to explain in any exhaustive way the extent of the duties to which the experts should have regard. And I just want to finally emphasise the critical importance that in preparing expert reports, the expert has in mind the professional standards and guidance that have been issued by, for example, the RICS in this area, also the contents of the tribunal's practice directions, which speak to their expectations of experts. And there are also particular duties reflected in the declaration, which bear on matters such as fee arrangements, which have been discussed in tribunal cases and are of critical importance. So there is obviously the need to be properly informed in relation to all of those matters and to have taken those into account in the preparation of the evidence and in the ongoing conduct during the course of the proceedings, because as I've emphasised elsewhere in this podcast, the duties that the experts have to the tribunal are ongoing and must be adhered to at all stages of the proceedings, not just when the report is being prepared. So that brings to a close this podcast on the preparation of expert evidence in rating cases. I hope it's been of some interest. If you do have any comments or feedback, please do feel free to email me at dkolinsky@landmarkchambers.co.uk. That's dkolinsky @landmarkchambers.co.uk, or to contact me on LinkedIn. Thank you very much indeed for listening, and goodbye.